Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, my name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite, Managed Healthcare Executive's Senior Editor Peter Werwein speaks with President and Co-Founder of Diameter Health, John D'Amore. The two discuss the standards of Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, or FHIR, as they apply to insurers.
Hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein. I am Senior Editor at Managed Healthcare Executive. Today, we're speaking to John D'Amore. He's President and Co-Founder of Diameter, and he is a FHIR expert. That's not FHIR as in things turning ablaze, but it's Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, and it's the engine the system that is going to hopefully usher in an era of interoperability and freer flow of data across the healthcare system. Thanks for making time today, John. I guess you're talking to us from Boston.
Yep, from Boston, and thanks so much for having me here today, Peter.
And Diameter works with health plans and health resource exchanges and people who care about healthcare data. So, John, why don't you give us just a 101 on FHIR to sort of bring people who maybe have some familiarity with it, but are a little insecure on what it actually means. So, you know, your 101 or maybe your cocktail hour summation of what FHIR is.
Yep, absolutely happy to do so for it. I'll give the abbreviated version of how we got here in healthcare for it. Obviously, health data has been collected in electronic records for a long period of time for it. We've had standards that exchange billing data between a provider and a health plan for it. We've had information that flows from a lab system back to a hospital for it, and also ways that documents can flow from one EHR to another EHR. Each one of those used older technologies. So for example, the clinical documents that actually flow today and flow today by the millions every day are kind of a snapshot in time of your medical record. It has your allergies, your encounters, your immunizations, your medications. It's kind of like a digital chart in a certain extent for it. But that information is relatively hard for receivers of that information to put into applications to use that data very fluidly. So we all love our phones for it. And the fact that I can install Lyft or Uber on my phone and it can use my GPS location and it can use the GPS location of the driver to match us up and get us to where we need to go for it. In the Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, or FHIR, pronounced FHIR, Peter, as you did very properly for it, is really the newer version of how that data can flow between EHRs, health plans, health information exchanges, and health IT products generally for it. It uses web modern technologies. So just like Lyft and Uber will use a lot of web modern queries for your GPS, it uses that same type of packets of information in what's called JavaScript Object Notation, or JSON, to access that information. And unlike that document that I talked about, it actually breaks down each of the information to much more manageable bits. So what is an allergy that this patient has? What is an medication that this patient has, or a problem this patient has? And you can query each one of those. Those are called resources within the FHIR spectrum. And then it also puts a lot of the terminology and the content specifications around how you're supposed to share that information. So as an API, it's really going to bring us a lot more into the 20th century for how data exchange occurs.
Or the 21st, maybe?
A 21st century. Sorry about that. Yeah.
I think we've been in the 20th century. So as one way of thinking about this in just the broadest brushstroke is that we still have the data flows in healthcare, but it's still sort of in some sense document based. And that's, is that why, you know, doctors' offices are the last places on God's earth to use fax machines? And what FHIR does is it gets us away from the document, a static, and it might be a multi-page document. It gets away from, and it breaks up that document into bits of information that can be grabbed sort of one by one, mm-hmm. Or as a group, or in any number of combinations. Is that, you know, is that one way to think about it?
That's absolutely the right way to think about it. Those documents won't go away because they obviously play a key part of the scenario. We're hoping to get rid of the fax machines, certainly, and use much more of the digital formats of those documents for it. But say that you have an application that a doctor wants to use to track the growth of a child. You know that they have CDC and World Health Organization trackers that say, what's your height, what's your weight, and are you growing appropriately over time? By using a FHIR-enabled application, that app will be able to talk to your EHR and take the age of the patient and also their height and their weight, and then be able to track that according to their growth chart for it. And what you can do is enable these new applications, these new ways to exchange data. You can get out of the monolith of everything has to be baked by the EHR and delivered and shipped from them. It really allows for applications to be installed on top of the EHR, but it also allows for more granular data exchange even with a member. So one of the things that has come out of the recent rulings around this from a federal landscape perspective is that patients can access their own information using these same things, and they can put that data on their smartphone.
Right. And I think it also opened up the developers of applications and vendors will also have access in a new way, I believe. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's both for the member and also for other parties that want to be able to interchange with that data. And it obviously done in a secure and private manner. This isn't your data won't be on the internet. So
now there was a new rule put out by ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator of Health Care Information Technology, ONC report. Mm-hmm. In March, that I thought kicked the can down the road on this by a couple of years. And that's one set of rules, but I believe that there's also another set of rules that's FHIR related that apply to different parts of the healthcare sector. So maybe you can just take us through what ONC and what CMS are doing here so we can keep the rules straight.
No, that's a great point. There were really two large rules that dropped from the ONC as well as the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, in March of this year for it. It was going to be a very big announcement at HIMSS this year, which of course turned into a virtual event like just a week in advance of the actual thing down in Orlando, Florida. Actually, Donald Trump was scheduled to come and present on this. It was such a big deal for it, which would be the first time a sitting president has talked about this to a health IT community. These rules, the ONC rule applies to health systems and ambulatory care providers. So you think about a doctor in an office or a hospital or an ER type environment for it. The CMS rules apply to health plans. So manage Medicare, manage Medicaid for it, Medicare Advantage and other qualified health plans for it. You're spot on, Peter, for the ruling from ONC that applies to the health systems and ambulatory care providers is really a ruling that will go into effect in 2022 and 2023 for making those EHRs be compliant to the FHIR standard and be able to send data out and really be able to stop any information blocking associated with this information. But the impact for health plans is even quicker. So health plans need to make it available. Right now, when you go log on to your health plan via a portal, you can get a little bit of information about who's in network for you or who's your PCP for it. You can't get a lot of your history of all the claims and costs and deductibles or the clinical information that that health plan has on you. But starting next year, the rule is slated to go into effect in January 2021. However, there's been a 6-month enforcement delay because of COVID and coronavirus for that, which is it's probably going to be more effectively in July of next year. Where as a health plan member, you'll be able to log in and get that information using prior resources, and you'll be able to put it onto your phone. So you think about Apple HealthKit, and Android is also coming out with a whole host of apps to be able to access and store this information. It's really exciting to see that.
So it's the sort of information that the CMS rule is affecting and governing and firefying. Is it the same sort of information and it's located in the health plan, whereas the ONC information resides in the EHR and with your provider? But is it really, in terms of what comes out of it and what I might experience as a patient, is it really going to be the same sort of information?
Go ahead, complete, sorry.
Or if it's health plan based, is the CMS rule also bring in issues of my deductible and what things cost? And so I might have an app that would, track my healthcare expenses. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of both. So the one great thing about the rule that came out, and it came out simultaneously from ONC and CMS, is that the way that that clinical data comes out, so your allergies and your medications and your lab results and your vital signs, all that rich clinical detail are going to be the same format, whether it comes from your doctor's office or if it comes from your health plan. So that's a great thing, but you put your finger right on it. The health plan also has additional requirements to be able to put out information about your billing data. So your explanation of benefits, as this is often referred to, that has information on your co-pays and what got billed from a procedural basis and what got administered for that. So being able to put out that data from a health plan perspective is really going to be empowering. Health plans have a lot of that clinical data from EHRs already because they use it to be able to work on quality programs, like a big quality program that applies to over 90% of health plans is called HEDIS, but also to do risk adjustment, to do population health for it. But they'll have an obligation after they receive that data within the next business day to be able to make it available through FHIR APIs to a member. Now, come July of next year, most members won't log on the first day for it and start getting this, but being able to have that access is really going to empower a whole new way which you can retrieve your data. And over time, as the providers catch up and offices and hospitals are able to use this, it will be in the same format, which is the fourth version of the FHIR interoperability standard.
But, I was looking, it was a relative, it's a long story, but I was looking at this relatives portal, and I saw, and it was a health, it was through the insurer, and I saw a fair amount of clinical information, test results, mm-hmm. office visits. So some of this is available to us now, right? Mm-hmm. So have health plans already started to provide some of this? I'm just wondering in terms of the patients and the public, whether this is gonna seem like a evolution or a revolution come July of 2021.
Yeah. So that information that's already available on portals for health plans is generally, you can kind of view it there, or if you get an app, maybe you have a Cigna app or United app, you might be able to get it on that app. But it's not easy without FHIR to get that data into another system or another application for it, which is that's going to be one of the big things that's really advanced as part of this. But going to, thinking about that framework for how this happens and how this changes, I do think it's going to be a very big step forward for liberating data access. So I would put it as more than evolutionary. These types of standards have not really ever applied to health plans before. And getting ready for preparing all that clinical data into a FHIR format is actually going to be a big lift for them. So I think it's more revolutionary, both on the effort that health plans will need to put into this, but also it's going to allow a patient to walk into a doctor's office and have a much more complete and robust medical history when they talk to their next provider of care, who will eventually be able to take that data back into their EHR and, eliminate those forms. I mean, how often do we sit at the office and we fill out again, what medications are you on? Again, what allergies do you have? It's really going to be empowering to start taking that out of the system, which I think is truly exciting.
So how big a lift is this going to be to make their data FHIR compatible? And is it possible we're going to have a big hairy mess on our hands in July because, you know, they have existing data that's organized a certain way and it's embedded in a certain way, and making it FHIR accessible is going to be hugely problematic? Or, you know, I'm just wondering how big of a lift this is going to be for the health plans.
Yeah. Health plans have a pretty good history of dealing with billing data. So the information that comes in about how much you paid, they can track your deductible. They know if you've hit your maximum or if you're due for more copays. They're pretty good at tracking that stuff. And I think putting that stuff on FHIR is a natural next step for them. If it was just that, it wouldn't be such a big lift. But the clinical data, and specifically right when we kicked off, we talked about clinical documents, or often known as CCDs or CCDAs, and other formats for data like HL7B2, which is how lab data might flow between systems, or what's called an admit, discharge, and transfer notice might come between an HIE and a hospital. Those older formats are going to need to be brought forward to the FHIR standard. The CMS rule actually says all clinical data electronically maintained by the health plan has to be available in the FHIR format. And they have there's about a 5-year history that they have to be able to go back. So in 2021, they'll have to go back to 2016 and make all that historic data FHIR ready and FHIR enabled for it. So I think that that's going to be a very big lift. Now, how diligent is enforcement going to be on this? You know, we don't know for it, which is if they can only get a year or two, you know, how big is the crackdown going to be? But if you look at the letter of the law, it's quite a high lift for all health plans to be able to take every clinical document and every HL7 message that they've received on a patient over the last 5 years and bring that forward into FHIR, particularly because the clinical standard for FHIR is new to them. It is not something that they've been using internal to their operations. They've been dealing with billing data for decades now, but clinical data and being able to use the right standards for that is very new to health plans.
Just one clarifying question. This is a CMS rule, and you mentioned Medicare and I think Medicaid managed care plans. Mm-hmm. But what about commercial insurers with employers? Does this rule govern those plans, or is it really only when it's a public payer?
Yeah, the way that obviously CMS exerts its force is through the public plans, but the expectation I think for most people is that commercial plans will follow suit. There are some qualifications. So if you have a plan that is on a health exchange within your state or on a national basis, that would also be required to follow this. I expect all of the majors, Cigna, Aetna, United, and kind of down the line from the top payers, will offer this to their commercial populations as well, even if it wasn't directly put in that plan.
And do you think there's going to be any difference between self-insured plans and the fully insured plans in this respect? I know that there are some differences when it comes to state regs, but this is obviously not a state reg.
I think most of the health plans that I've been speaking to are thinking about this, doing this on a global basis. Because frankly, if you start doing this for your 65-year-olds and plus, or just your Medicaid population, you're going to set expectations in the market about what you can do. And you're going to have frustrated users to say, wait a second, you're talking about my mother can go and get data on her phone, but I can't. And we're using the same insurer for it. I think most of them are thinking about doing this pretty universally between self-employed and fully insured plans for it and kind of across that spectrum. I'm sure there'll be some exceptions to that, but I think that would generally be the case.
And you said that this pertains to clinical information that the health plans already have. So that conjures up in my mind that they actually have this information already by virtue of paying claims. Mm-hmm. But another image I have in my mind is the health plans having to appeal to providers to get this information. Mm-hmm. Are they already in possession of this, and it's a question of, you know, making it FHIR ready, or are they going to have to be going to their providers and begging and you know, begging for their clinical information?
And that exact question was in the rule for it, from the proposed rule to the final rule, which is, what if the health plan doesn't have the data, the clinical information for the patient? And the health plan is under no obligation to go get additional information that it doesn't already have. And health plans don't always get all the clinical records from every provider of care and every place that patients receive treatment. So they're under no obligation to get new data or to have a longitudinal and comprehensive clinical record for you, but what their obligations are for any clinical data that they maintain, that they have to be able to bring that data forward onto the FHIR standard for it. Now the interesting question is, well, how much do they maintain? And the answer is today, quite a lot, because for a lot of these programs that deal with quality performance, they need those clinical records to be able to show that you're in compliance. You know, for example, if you're a hypertensive patient, you want your blood pressure to be low, and they need those clinical records to show that information. Now, that information that they have been using for many years for quality reporting, for population health, for care management, is also going to be available to the member themselves.
So they've come into possession of this information, this data, mm-hmm. by virtue of some of these value-based payment and care models, whereby there are quality metrics that they have to meet, as well as some, you know, financial benchmarks. But have they come into this because of value-based payment?
Absolutely. Value-based care is really the crux of why people have tried to move forward. When you want to look at how you're doing and how you're performing and how you're managing a patient, it's so essential to have more than just the billing record, because the billing record will tell you in a fee-for-service world what was done. The clinical data is going to say whether we're really achieving those outcomes. And every Medicare Advantage program is subject to the Medicare Stars program, which gives quality-related bonuses. So virtually, you know, there's some exceptions state to state for some Medicaid plans and other ones for it, but almost all of them have a value-based component. And you put your finger right on the crux of why they have so much clinical data.
Boy, I've got my fingers on a lot of different things today. I'm rocking it, baby. Anyway, or else I think you're used to flattering people, something in between. So is this, in terms of the public, might this end up creating a lot of confusion? Because a lot of what's happening here is things are being FHIR enabled, and that's going to open things up to APIs and to every vendor. And I could see where there might be an onslaught of offerings that, you know, that this app and that app is the best for da 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 da. And there'll be the confusion of too many choices might set in.
Yep.
So I guess I'm just wondering how you think this is going to play out in terms of businesses and enterprise, and will we see 1,000 apps launched in 2021 that promise me the best user experience and the most reliable information, you know, out of my health plan?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there are going to be a lot of apps available, whether it's thousands or just maybe dozens to hundreds is, you know, I think a little bit of a TBD for it, because there'll be a question about how do those apps then make a business model out of it? You know, how are they able to get payment from either the member themselves or from other participants and other parties in the healthcare ecosystem for it? So I definitely think there'll be a lot of apps, but I think the idea of how is this going to be chaos is really around some of the things that are being done right now from both a federal perspective and also just health systems, healthcare organizations working together to come up with ways to say, what are the right principles, right? What are the right business principles for these apps? You know, these apps shouldn't take your health data as soon as they receive it and then go and try and sell it for a lot of other purposes, you know, sell it for marketing or mailings or to pharmaceutical companies for it. So there are going to be some code of conduct things that come out over the course of the next year. There've actually been some nonprofit groups that have begun to have draft formats of what that look like. And you'll want to look for kind of that good housekeeping seal of approval to make sure that the apps are being good stewards of your data. You know, protected health information is one of the most important and critical things to an individual. And you don't want that to be, you know, passed along in an untoward manner for it. So I think that there is going to be a little bit of chaos as we sort this out. I think that there are going to be more than just a few. There will be a lot of different applications for it. But I do see this evolving into a way that there become winners who are the better apps for managing this data. And again, you know, July 1 we won't know the winner at that point, because it's just going to be the start. It will take several years for people to become more aware that they have this opportunity and to work out kinks in the apps and in the ecosystem.
So is nonprofits like maybe AARP giving its seal of approval for certain apps, and we presumably might see a Consumer Reports rating of apps and that sort of experience and business,
There's one leading group called the Karen Alliance, which has a lot of big organizations like AARP. I don't know if AARP is actually in there for it, but that actually have a lot of the big tech companies and a lot of big constituent stakeholder organizations involved that are actually coming out with the rules of the road, so that there will be some kind of code of conduct for how these apps are actually using this data for it. On a go-forward basis, I think that app stores will probably be a way that a lot of those ratings happen, but I can see consumer reports and other ways of saying, what is the best way to manage your health data? What I think is really gonna be interesting is once these APIs, application programming interfaces, kind of, which is what FHIR is, it's an API. And once these APIs make this data accessible, you can have just a whole set of new ways of this data being aggregated and presented that really change how people act. You think about what Mint did for aggregating financial data for a person and be able to create a budget for it. That's a really powerful thing. And if we can have that for healthcare data, you can really see some different ways that people are getting this information over time and looking at their health overall.
Right. So you would... it would be like trackers, but more powerful and more, you know, the data, the anchoring in the data would be stronger, I presume.
And I would expect the big vendors, like just like my Fitbit now is owned by Google, I would expect very much Google, Microsoft, Amazon to be very much in the fold for thinking about how they can come out with some of the leading applications here.
So what I'm envisioning in the future is that I'm not going to go to the doctor's office. I'll have a virtual visit, and she'll call up my, whatever the FHIR-enabled app is, she'll call it up on the side screen, and she'll talk me through my values and trend lines of what my goals should be. And so the patient-doctor experience might become more kind of data-driven.
I absolutely think that it's going to become more data-driven. One thing I will say, though, is I don't think EHRs go away in that proposition. I use an analogy sometimes when I talk about this, which is we talk about all the amazing things you can do with collecting your financial data, creating budgets, investments, all that type of stuff for it. That didn't get rid of ATMs, you know, a place where you can deposit money and take out money. EHRs are going to be that transactional system that clinicians, both in hospitals and ambulatory practice, will continue to use for decades to come to order a new medication or to order a new lab result for it. But you're absolutely right that they're going to have new ways to then visualize this information with external applications so that they can have better dialogues. I see a future too where essentially we can think about transitioning from a system where patients show up at the office when they feel ill to it being much more proactive and much more population health driven, where you bring in the patients that need to be seen even before that patient has put themselves forward.
Yeah, doc, look at my phone. Look what it says here. I'm in trouble. Something like that. Anyway, well, this has been fascinating, and I feel so much better about FHIR now than I did 30 minutes ago, because I have to admit I was a little perplexed by it, and this gave me some working ideas and some things to think about, and maybe as July 2021 approaches, we'll check in with you again and see how things are going in this new FHIR-enabled healthcare system that I guess will be seen unfold over the next several years. So thanks a lot for the time today.
Absolutely. Be happy to talk then for it and really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.